Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. And yes, we are back here on The Punch Out, the 28th of April, 2021. Very happy to be back with you, as we always are, here on The Punch Out Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And don't forget that today, Wednesday, you also, if you are a patron of Breakthrough News, will have access to our patrons-only edition of The Punch Out. You can go to patreon.com/breakthroughnews if you want to become a patron and get access to it. This week, we are delving into Monday's revelations from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court about massive unconstitutional activity by the FBI. So patreon.com/breakthroughnews. But here on The Punch Out, we have plenty for you today. Right now, we are going to be talking about Somalia. Things could be looking up there. So we'll get into all of that. We want to talk about some of the geopolitics surrounding the vaccination issue, the vaccination rollout, if you will, around the world, specifically the use of Sputnik V by certain countries and not by others. But before we get to either of those two very important stories, we want to start with, well, just laying it out for you why the rich absolutely should pay higher taxes. President Joe Biden has rolled out a set of proposals he is calling the American Family Plan, addressing a range of issues related to health care, education, paid family leave policies, among other things. Biden's plan carries a price tag of $1.8 trillion, and they say it'll be paid for by higher taxes on the wealthy, closing some tax loopholes, and just generally improving the administration at the IRS to collect more of the chunk of tax payments that don't get made every single year. And this is where we really want to focus, this tax issue, especially taxes on the wealthy, because the announcement of Biden's plan is again raising the perennial question of whether or not the rich should or should not pay greater taxes. And of course, the related fiction that the wealthy are somehow so hard up for cash that historically slight increases in taxation will cause the entire economy to seize up and collapse. I mean, ridiculous. But anyway, we're going to prove it to you. I mean, honestly, you could argue that Biden's proposals don't go far enough. For instance, one proposal from Biden to fund his plan is to increase the capital gains tax rate to 39.6% from where it is now. It's about 20%. Now, that's an eminently reasonable proposal. It pretty much only affects wealthy people. I mean, not pretty much. It only affects wealthy people. Wealthy elites make the vast majority of their income in so-called capital gains, which essentially is money they make off the value of their own investments going up, more or less. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but that's more or less how you should look at it. And by taking income more as assets than cash that they're, you know, paid out as a so-called salary, the lower capital gains rate has always made it easy for rich people to pay well below the actual amount of taxes that they really should be paying based on the amount of money they have. So Biden essentially is proposing to make the income tax rate, the highest income tax rate, and the capital gains tax rate the same, so you don't have that loophole, really was what it was, to find a way to restructure your income as capital gains and pay a significantly lower tax rate. But stepping back, though, even though I said it is eminently reasonable, certainly makes a lot of sense. You could argue that it doesn't go far enough. Now, remember, Biden is trying to raise $1.8 trillion over a number of years at that. U.S. billionaires increased their wealth $1.3 trillion during the pandemic. So in 1 year, basically. Their overall wealth jumped from $3 trillion to $4.3 trillion. So without a doubt, all of these very wealthy people, the billionaires of the United States who made $1.3 trillion during the pandemic, will be subject to a higher capital gains rate. And undoubtedly, it will affect them disproportionately. But when you think about the fact that the overall price tag to pay for important things, even if they themselves don't go far enough, like paid family leave, but still very important things, and it only costs $1.8 trillion to do those very important things, you could really argue that there should be some sort of windfall tax rate on these billionaires where you could take almost all of the money that you need to do these very important things and much, much more. And the only impact on them was they'd be as rich as they were in February of 2021, which means that they would still be among the 600 richest people on the planet. They would still, almost all of them, either be billionaires or on the bottom end, have hundreds of millions of dollars. And again, try to raise $1.8 trillion. $1.3 trillion in 1 year raised by billionaires. So again, you can see how even though, of course, raising the capital gains rate makes a lot of sense. But people, there's so much wealth being produced in this country that easily you could raise almost the entire amount of Biden's proposal purely off of just taking the wealth made during the pandemic by billionaires. But, you know, beyond that, it's also clear that the rich are very often just not paying what they actually owe. Now, of course, we all know about tax breaks and loopholes and all of that. And the reality is, though, not all of those are created equal. They can certainly be challenged by the IRS, and tax evasion is outright illegal, but of course it has to be investigated. Conveniently, as the wealth of the 1% has skyrocketed over the past 10 years, the U.S. Congress has been steadily reducing funds to the IRS, significantly decreasing enforcement on wealthy tax cheats. As the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities notes, quote, "This hollowing out of the audit staff has caused audit rates to plummet, particularly of wealthy individuals and large corporations." Particularly of wealthy individuals and large corporations, end quote. They go on to note that, quote, "The audit rate for millionaires fell by 71% between 2010 and 2019, from 8.4% to just 2.4%. And they also note that new research, quote, "estimates that the top 1% of filers likely underreport around 20% of their income." That's just on average. The Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy notes, very interestingly, quote, "Taxpayers claiming the earned income tax credit are more likely to be audited than households earning $200,000 to $500,000 per year." They go on to note that a recent study from the Treasury Department, yes, of the United States, found that, quote, "The IRS's failure to prioritize collecting delinquent taxes from households with $200,000 or more in annual income has led to $38.5 billion in uncollected taxes. Taxpayers earning $1.5 million or more have about $2.4 billion in taxes outstanding." And again, that's likely an undercount of the true value of the uncollected taxes from the rich as they hide their wealth. But I mean, just think about that. The poorest people in the country getting the earned income tax credit are more likely to be audited by the IRS than rich people. And it really just brings us to the other and perhaps central issue here, which is how much money is enough. I mean, clearly no one can argue credibly that the wealthiest Americans couldn't pay significantly higher taxes and still live very comfortable lives. The Wall Street Journal, for instance, states that if all of Biden's tax changes were implemented, the real top tax rate would be around 43%. Now, some people might actually quibble with that, but that's their analysis. 43% top tax rate. From 1932 to 1986, the top rate never dropped below 50%. In 1962, it was 91%. Now, of course, super rich people weren't really paying the top rate either. Tax dodges are nothing new. But the point being, it wasn't like the 1% were living in poverty in 1962. So a major part of the debate, the core of it, if you will, is political. It's about who creates wealth and the social obligations that those who own the wealth have. The real debate in Congress over this isn't about whether taxing the rich more is somehow going to be bad for the economy, but whether or not the rich have the right to profiteer to an unlimited degree at the expense of everyone else. Despite the public health emergency that the world remains in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic, the politics of the new Cold War are standing in the way of increasing the worldwide vaccination rate. Despite the clear efficacy of Russia's Sputnik V vaccine, a number of hard-hit countries continue to try to block its use for obviously political reasons of not wanting to allow Russia to gain prestige for developing one of the world's most effective COVID vaccines. For instance, the European Medicines Agency this week is still claiming it doesn't have enough data to approve Sputnik V, which is just patently absurd, and we all know Europe is being hit very hard right now. But just to give you some examples, for instance here, Hungary, an EU member that turned to Sputnik V as the EU had just totally failed to roll out vaccines in an effective way. Well, Hungary recently released its first results in terms of the efficacy of the various vaccines, and they're using whatever vaccine they can get their hands on there. And Sputnik was, in fact, the best vaccine among the lot, which included AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Sinopharm, and Moderna. It had the fewest, by far, in terms of infections per 100,000 people. So the number of people who still get it despite being vaccinated out of every 100,000 people. So 95 out of 100,000 people compared to 177 out of 100,000 people with Moderna, which was the next lowest. Notably, Hungary and Serbia, who have essentially sought to get every vaccine they can, have vaccinated about 2 times more people than the EU average. So not only is the vaccine effective, but as common sense would suggest, the countries that aren't letting politics get in the way are able to vaccinate more people quickly. And it's obviously politics at play here, because there are reams of data showing that Sputnik V does in fact work and is in fact safe. The Lancet, that's the world's most respected medical journal, published a paper, unchallenged so far, showing that Sputnik V had a 91.6% effectiveness rate. A recent study of 3.8 million people stated that the effectiveness rate was 97%. And whatever the exact percentage here, 60 countries have approved Sputnik V, so obviously it's well recognized around the world that it is in fact effective. Everyone from Argentina to Kenya to India and Ghana is in that list. Countries of essentially every political persuasion and level of scientific sophistication, and now also the world's main medical journal, are saying it works. Yet, countries like Brazil are still trying to block it. In fact, some states in Brazil have had to take the central government to court to try to gain access to Sputnik V vaccines that they've actually already placed a purchase order for, as the Bolsonaro government continues to engage in this new Cold War style of politics around Sputnik. I mean, there's just no other reason for these decisions except for the politics of it. I mean, what else could you be trying to do other than to try to blunt the impact of the obvious feather in the cap Russia has gained from developing this vaccine? In places like Brazil, in Europe, where they're facing second, third waves, massive numbers of deaths. I mean, it's incredibly cynical. It's criminal almost. I mean, it's crucially important everyone get the vaccine as quickly as possible everywhere to prevent the emergence of virus-resistant strains and taking us back to zero. I mean, clearly it's all hands on deck here, all vaccines on deck here. To try to block access to an effective vaccine to score a meaningless political point is cynical. Just callous, just criminal, as I said before. And it only helps make all of us less safe. Well, we have been warning for a few weeks here of a possible escalation in violence in Somalia. So we feel duty bound to report to you here that there are at least some signs emerging that are pointing to a degree in the other direction. Still very violent there, but perhaps it's not deepening, which certainly for the people of Somalia is good. But we'll see. Yesterday, the president of Somalia, who had essentially just unilaterally extended his presidential term by 2 years a few weeks ago, seemed to have climbed down in an address to the nation. And the president, who's known colloquially as Farmajo, said he would appear before parliament. He wanted to negotiate with the opposition, and he was looking to hold elections as quickly as possible. His possible climb down took place after armed forces loyal to the president and to the opposition took up opposing armed positions in the capital of Mogadishu, and the country certainly seemed headed into an even deeper civil war. Now, it isn't 100% clear if the opposition will accept a return to negotiations without Farmajo's resignation, so because remember, he's overstayed his term here. But he certainly doesn't seem to want to offer his resignation, and it's certainly possible he's really just maneuvering here to regain some lost favor from powerful backers like the United States and keep the thing going on his end. Powerful nations like the U.S. have been harping on the need for all sides to fulfill the agreement signed by Farmajo and the opposition in September about the general conduct of the next elections, which basically would be an electoral college of the 100 most powerful people who support the government coming together to choose someone. Farmaggio has pointedly brought up wanting to return to that agreement, and it seems maybe looking to get the so-called quote-unquote international community to put pressure on his rivals to acquiesce to him staying in power for longer as the negotiations and potentially elections take place. And Farmaggio continues to promote the idea that if they wait longer, that they can do a more expanded electoral system and, in fact, bring a one-person, one-vote style of election to Somalia. But without the continuity of him staying in power, it couldn't happen. So he's essentially saying the longer you leave me in there and the more we stretch it out, the more likely we will increase democracy. There's a lot that can be said about that, but it's certainly laughable for a number of reasons. And one is that huge swaths of the country are controlled by Al-Shabaab, an insurgency that hates the government. And there's also just no existing election infrastructure, and building one would be a tremendous challenge under existing conditions. So clearly, Farmaggio is looking for time to maneuver here. And that could, however, result in less short-term violence, which is certainly a relief for the people of Somalia, many thousands of whom had been already and were starting to prepare to flee their homes in and around Mogadishu. Somalia is really essentially the least known victim of the post-9/11 U.S. regime change wars. A U.S.-backed Ethiopian invasion in 2006 overthrew the first unified government they'd had after a 15-year civil war, and they plunged the country back into a civil war that hasn't stopped since. The so-called government is really just a collection of power brokers who have alliances with powerful international interests. It clearly lacks legitimacy and real control over huge parts of the country. The real victims, of course, are the Somali people forced to live amidst massive poverty and violence or flee their homes to try to make a living abroad. All because of the elite power games among a handful of powerful nations. And that's going to do it for us here today on The Punch-Out. Don't forget, also today, the patrons-only edition of The Punch-Out will be available. Go to patreon.com/breakthroughnews if you want to get access to that. We'll be back with you on our regular Punch-Out service tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard, here on Breakthrough News.